With the sacred ceremonies being accomplished and burial being given to the holy body, the Cistercian abbots took monks with them on the road to Rome. Upon arriving, they informed Pope Alexander III of all the circumstances of the precious death of Galgano. Not very long after, a solemn embassy, equipped for providing the processes, faith, and testimony to His Holiness, was sent to the same pontiff from the city of Siena, as well as the community of Caesadino. They brought with them no less than the earnest supplications of many religious and famous people for the canonization of Galgano. The Supreme Shepherd, who had known the saint in Rome on the occasion of his pilgrimage, recalled to himself the miraculous revelation he had, as well as his outstanding virtue. He found the demand agreeable, and with great care and the consent of the sacred college, along with any other necessary formalities, canonized Galgano and added him to the number of confessors. He also ordered that both the office and the feast were to be carried out on the day of his death, that is, on December 3rd, so that as a very rare example, he was enrolled in the number of the saints in less than a year from his death, by the same pontiff who predicted that at the end of the year he would pass to a better life. In the meantime, many notable miracles were worked at his tomb, some of which are recorded in his office. A child of 8 years fell into a nearby river and drowned, but was recalled to life. He freed a woman possessed by the devil for 7 years. An innocent man who had been maligned was imprisoned in the Val de Occhia, but he escaped by flight and was pursued by the jailers. As they were about to overtake him, he was miraculously taken out of their sight. A woman's broken hand was restored to life, and many others are more widely reported in the life written by Father Lombardelli, of which I limit myself to a brief compendium. The round chapel had already been completed and dedicated under the invocation of St. Galgano, as well as the small monastery attached to it in the year 1186, that is, 5 years after his death, when the inhabitants of Caesadina and the city of Siena and the monks simultaneously desired to have some relics of his holy body. It was decided to exhume it. Assistant members, being authorized to undertake this task, excavated and removed the body, and found his head and his face were preserved, as they were in life, while the rest of his body was somewhat decayed. The head, after being severed and placed in a special reliquary, was then exposed for public veneration. The rest of his body was laid in a decent casket, back in its place, so that later it could be extracted again to form relics. The last remnants were reinterred in a casket of lead sealed on four sides with the inscription, Ossa Segagani. The holy head was placed on the altar of the chapel, where it was venerated for a long time, until the abbey was dispelled, and the church at the foot of the mountain moved so that the functions could be carried out more decorously. In every sinister event, for every need, the city of Siena and other surrounding towns went to implore the divine aid through his intercession, and frequently his relics were carried in procession to Siena, in times of famine, pestilence, and for obtaining graces expressly implored. As a result, the citizens of Siena wished to keep the relics permanently. To avoid this difficulty, the long trip, and the irreverence which could happen to them, it is believed that, around the year 1300, they were placed in the monastery of St. Prosper of Siena, near the Porta Camulia, where Polissena Brizzi, the bride promised to Galgano, was vested as a nun, and died in the odor of sanctity, as was mentioned above in an earlier chapter. There the head remained for a short time, until it was taken to the cathedral in order to secure it from the hands of devoted kidnappers who had more than once tried to rush upon it. Being at last successful in their plan, they took it with them out of the city, when, between the door and the gate called Camulia, they were lost in the lawn that then existed. If they were in the thick woods, they could not find the exit, until, surprised by supernatural terror, they set down the sacred head on the ground, found the exit with ease, and fled. The great miracle is preserved in the memory of the door, where there is, above the arch on the guard's side, a painting depicting the head in a tabernacle, that has two angels lifted up off the earth to bring it back to the monastery of Saint Prospero, as in fact happened. Later, the head of Saint Ogana was placed in the cathedral, and after that, it was transferred to the church of the hospital of L'Escala in front of the cathedral in order to satisfy the devotion of the poor patients. In 1477, at the request of the monks of the Abbey of San Galgano, it was taken to their hospice, which was near the bridge in the vicinity of the Porta Romana. It was called the Magdalene, and the abbot at that time was named Bartolomeo. On that occasion, he compensated the hospice and the church for their inestimable loss by placing the precious relic at the altar. More recently, in 1550, it was brought to where it rests presently, that is, in the church of the monastery of St. Mary of the Angels, commonly called the Santo Cizio, next to the Porta Romana. The many translations were caused by either the fear that the head would be abducted, or the fervent desire of various devotees who longed to possess it, though we do not know for sure in either instance. What we do know, however, is that wherever it was indeed always held in veneration, and conducted frequently in procession through the city in any urgent need. When Father Lombardelli wrote to say farewell in 1577, it was perfectly preserved and intact, as revealed from his narrative in this regard, where, after having described the magnificence of the reliquary formed of precious metals, enriched with gems and adorned with an engraved legend in outline describing the most remarkable actions of the saint, the following words invents its condition: "This most precious head is forthright in all parts, and in front has a small and subtle scratch on the right side. It is beardless, but with a full head of hair as cloth of gold, that has a veneer like silk. Its look is jolly, nearer to being full of bright color that lights up as if it were alive, and with a few freckles, so that in some, I believe, few relics can compare with it. I do not possess sufficient ink to write with a pen how beautiful it seems, both concerning the person and the mind, when many years are all seen. But as for the many miracles God has shown it, I will say in the next chapter." From this description it is gathered that over the course of 4 centuries the sacred head had been preserved as though it were alive. Now, however, below the eyelashes is reduced almost to a skeleton, retaining only a little bit of skin on the cheeks, but the forehead and scalp are always in pristine condition, retaining the hair seen since the time of Father Lombardelli.